The women did not know each other. Four different lives, four different states, four different reasons for being in New York. What they shared was a way of working. Online classified ads, encrypted phones, arrangements made in private, and one man who had learned how to find them. The first four bodies appeared in December of 2010, along Ocean Parkway, on Jones Beach Island, Long Island. In a stretch of beach scrub so remote that local police rarely patrolled it, they were found not because anyone was specifically looking for them, but because officers were searching for a different woman, Shannon Gilbert, who had vanished in May of that year after fleeing a client's house in Oak Beach and calling 911 from somewhere in the dark marsh nearby. The dispatcher who received her call could not pinpoint her location. The call lasted 23 minutes. At some point, Shannon Gilbert stopped answering. It would take more than a year to find her body, face down in a drainage channel, less than half a mile from the client's house. But while police searched for Shannon Gilbert along the Ocean Parkway corridor in December of 2010, they found four other sets of human remains, four other women who had not been reported missing in connection with this search. They had been wrapped carefully in burlap and placed along the highway with what investigators would later describe as a deliberate geography. Not hidden in the sense of buried, but positioned in scrub and overgrowth, in a way that required specific knowledge of that landscape to find. The burlap was significant. It was not improvisation material. Someone had obtained it, transported it to a remote beach after dark, and used it the same way more than once. "I have followed this case for years, read every public court filing and forensic disclosure. What I keep coming back to is one number. The man investigators were looking for lived approximately 2 miles from the stretch of parkway where the bodies were found. 2 miles. He drove past that corridor regularly on his way to and from Manhattan, where he ran an architectural firm, paid taxes, appeared at industry events, and shook hands with clients who hired him to design retail spaces and commercial interiors. For more than a decade, that particular stretch of Long Island Highway was just his commute. The four women found in December of 2010 became known as the Gilgo Four. Their names were Melissa Barthelemy, Megan Waterman, Amber Lynn Costello, and Maureen Brainerd Barnes. All four had advertised escort services on Craigslist and other adult platforms. All four had been reported missing between 2007 and 2010. All four were from outside New York, from Connecticut, Maine, New Jersey, and South Carolina, and all four had come to the city to work. Their families had been looking for them, some for years, before their remains were found on Jones Beach Island, as the search of the Ocean Parkway corridor continued through the following year. Investigators found additional human remains. The total would eventually reach approximately 11 sets of remains along a stretch of highway, not far from one of the most densely populated regions of the country. In some cases, those remains had been there for years. The county where this happened has a fully staffed homicide unit, a sex crimes unit, and the investigative infrastructure that a wealthy suburban county maintains. The evidence had been waiting. The mystery thread that runs through this case is not who. Ultimately, it is how. How does a man place at least four bodies along a 2-mile stretch of parkway within 2 miles of his own home over the course of years and continue for over a decade before anyone closes in on his name? Part of the answer is geographic. The Ocean Parkway corridor in winter is isolated, dark, traveled mostly by commuters moving too fast to notice anything in the scrub on either side. Part of the answer is forensic. The burlap degraded, the remote placement slowed discovery, and the evidence that remained required technology that did not exist in the early 2000s in its current form. But part of the answer is about the victims, women who worked in informal economies, using platforms designed for privacy, living in unofficial residences, reporting to no employer, moving between addresses. They exist in a gap between the institutional systems that generate rapid missing person investigations and the ones that do not. Several of the families of the Gilgo Four had filed missing person reports and found that those reports received limited investigative traction. The man who killed them understood whether explicitly or instinctively, which kinds of disappearances tend to be noticed quickly and which ones do not. The Shannon Gilbert question sits at the edge of all of this and will not resolve cleanly. Her death was ruled accidental, a drowning in a marsh ditch, the result of a woman running in darkness after what was described as an episode at a client's home in Oak Beach. Her family and advocates have disputed that ruling for years, arguing that the circumstances of her death are inconsistent with an accidental drowning. Investigators have maintained that her case is not connected to the Gilgo 4 murders. What is not disputed is this. Without her disappearance and the subsequent search it triggered, the four women found in December of 2010 might still be in the scrub along Ocean Parkway. She did not know she was leading anyone to them. But her last night on this earth is how they were finally found. The investigation that followed the discovery of the Gilgo 4 became for years a case that true crime communities followed and that produced almost no public results. The Suffolk County Police Department ran the primary investigation. There were questions from outside observers and eventually from federal agencies about the quality of that investigation and about the department itself, which was managing its own internal affairs problems during the same period. The combination of an opaque investigation and a complicated institutional environment meant that the case sat in a kind of public suspension, present, known, but apparently frozen. What was happening beneath the surface was more than it appeared. Investigators had assembled forensic profiles over time. A partial male DNA profile, obtained from samples associated with the remains, was significant enough to shape investigative strategy. Cell phone tower data placed a specific device near locations connected to the victims and the crime scenes at specific times. The emerging picture of the perpetrator, male, local, operating with a vehicle, familiar with the Ocean Parkway corridor, sharpened year by year. The name was not there yet. Then came the genealogical analysis. The same technology that had resolved cold cases in other jurisdictions. Submission of biological evidence to a genealogical database to establish a family connection. Then traditional investigation from there was applied to the Gilgo Beach evidence. The connection it returned was a starting point. From that starting point, investigators ran physical surveillance, collected discarded biological material, and obtained authorization for wiretaps, the wire evidence, portions of which entered the court record, documents a man going about his daily routines, driving, eating, conducting work conversations, while also making statements that, in the framing of the prosecution, are consistent with someone managing a decades-long secret. Rex Hoyerman was an architect. His firm operated out of a midtown Manhattan office and had been running for decades. He worked on commercial renovation projects, the kind of steady, unglamorous work that builds a reputation without attracting attention. He was from South Farmingdale, Long Island. He had a wife and two adult children. He commuted regularly between his home and his Manhattan office, traveling the Long Island corridor that includes Ocean Parkway. He was, to all external appearances, unremarkable. The evidence that emerged through the investigation changed that picture substantially. Phone records placed Hurryman in contact with victims in periods consistent with the timeline of their disappearances. Cell phone tower data logged his device near relevant locations on nights consistent with the forensic evidence. Physical evidence, including hair samples subjected to forensic analysis, provided material connections between Hoerman's household and the burlap used in the disposal of the victim's remains. His digital search history, obtained through warrant, contained patterns that investigators characterized as consistent with the investigation's findings. The tape in this case, the record that survived where other evidence degraded, was the cell tower data, not a cassette, not a surveillance recording. The automated data signature of a phone pinging towers and logging movement. The burlap had been chosen because it does not retain fingerprints cleanly. The remote geography had been chosen because witnesses were unlikely. But the phone was not chosen for anything. It was just carried, and it created a document of presence that existed in a carrier's servers, regardless of what the man who carried it intended. Rex Hoyerman was arrested on the evening of July 13, 2023, outside a Manhattan restaurant He was charged with the murders of all four members of the Gilgo Four. He pleaded not guilty. His wife filed for divorce within days of the arrest. His firm closed. In 2024, he was additionally charged with the murder of Jessica Taylor, whose partial remains had been found in Manorville, Long Island in 2003, and additional remains linked to the same victim near Gilgo Beach. That charge extended the apparent timeline of killing back several years before the Gilgo Four, and raised questions about how many other cases might eventually carry his name. The families of the Gilgo Four have been waiting, in some cases since 27, for this part of the story. Melissa Barthelemy's sister received phone calls in early 2010 from a man she believed was the killer. Calls in which the caller made statements the court record characterizes as taunting. Those calls were placed from cell towers in Midtown Manhattan. The cell tower data for those calls is part of the prosecution's evidence. The man who made them, according to that evidence, is Rex Huerman. The trial, involving an extraordinary volume of forensic evidence, digital records, and forensic testimony, moves at the pace that cases of this complexity require. The question of whether additional unidentified remains found along Ocean Parkway are connected to the same name has not been publicly resolved. Investigators continue working through the evidence. What I come back to, reading the documents, the evidence was being written the whole time. The cell tower logs existed. The DNA profiles were waiting for the technology to close the gap between a family connection and a specific name. The digital trail that Huerman generated over years of driving, communicating, and going about a life that looked ordinary from the outside was accumulating in databases he never thought about. The concealment was in the burlap and the remote geography. The record was in the data. 13 years is a long time to live, 2 miles from what you did. The cell tower knew the whole time.